Good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have us on the line. Back from Annapolis, Maryland, Pastor David Whitney. Pastor Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us tonight. Pastor Whitney, are you there?
Yes, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, Dr. Stan, and share with people who care about their country enough to learn about the Constitution and what our founding fathers actually intended when they formed our Constitutional Republic.
Well, you know, many years ago, I put together a 10-point program, how to save America. And the first one was, of course, if you're going to get involved in this battle, you have to have a personal relationship with the Lord, because otherwise you'll come under tremendous spiritual attack and be neutralized. But point two was, understand our Constitution. Understand why America is different than other countries. Understand why, at one time, America was looked upon by the whole world as a Christian nation. Well, that's certainly not the case today. In fact, we've lost the moral high ground, and if we're going to regain it, then we have to go back to the very beginning and the fundamentals, and that's what, of course, the Institute of the Constitution does. So we were going to be talking about some of the amendments to the Constitution
yes.
tonight. Where are we, David?
Well, actually, we just completed talking about the 17th Amendment, I believe, last month, and so we'll dive into the 18th Amendment, but just to remind everyone where we're at, In looking at the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments, we see that in the Founders' era, they understood that the amendments to the Constitution were designed to put a high and impregnable wall around the federal government, that the central government could not do anything outside what it was permitted to do specifically in the Constitution and not permitted to do by the Bill of Rights. So in a sense, the seven articles of the Constitution talk about what the federal government can do. The first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, specify what the federal government cannot do. And subsequent to those 10 amendments, the succeeding 17 amendments, almost all of them, not all, but almost all of them, have to do with undermining that wall and sometimes actually breaching and breaking down that wall. And therefore, we have a federal government that is far more expansive and far more controlling and far more beyond anything our founding fathers would have agreed to as acceptable behavior for this constitutional republic.
But don't you think, David, that even, for instance, when they ratified the 14th Amendment, which is one of the most egregious ones, mm-hmm. after the Civil War, that the men who voted for that and the states that voted for the 17th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, never anticipated that it would be interpreted as it has been, you know, 50 or 100 years later.
Yes, and so part of the evil that's been spawned is that the Supreme Court has misinterpreted the original intent of even some of the less damaging of the amendments, and so we have a Supreme Court defining its own reality, basically, and expanding the power of the federal government to gargantuan proportions. I like to say we've got an octopus in Washington, D.C., not a government.
And, of course, I think what people have to understand is that our founding fathers recognized that freedom came from limiting the power of government. Liberty and limited government were synonymous. Tyranny and total government are synonymous. They knew that any government that can provide whatever the people want has to be able to take whatever they have and control them from the cradle to the grave. We'll be back shortly with Pastor David Whitney right here at Radio Liberty. Well, David, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, the 18th Amendment, as most people will recall, is the amendment that prohibited alcohol. And there was a long and slow process of gaining approval of this. Prohibition was a move that the temperance movement had for many years been gathering strength and gaining ground. And finally, in 1919, they had the 19th Amendment or 18th Amendment approved. And it said that manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquors within the or importation of them in the United States will be strictly forbidden and prohibited. And then, of course, the Section 2 adds what many of these amendments say: Congress and the several states shall have concurrent power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. In other words, giving Congress a blank check to do whatever they deemed necessary to enforce prohibition. One of the interesting things about prohibition is that it was recognized clearly by the people in our country at that point in time, in 1919, that the federal government did not have power to control and regulate alcohol in the Constitution and the 17 amendments to the Constitution. In other words, they recognized in order for there to be what, in essence, prohibition was, a war on alcohol in America, in order for there to be a war on alcohol, special permission had to be granted to the federal government. They did not have that permission from the Constitution nor from the first 17 amendments to the Constitution. The only way the federal government could gain that power to wage a war on alcohol was by creating a constitutional amendment. And our founding fathers designed the amendment process to be difficult, not to be easy, and to be a process that is not easily accomplished. And so they recognize that changing our form of government should not be something that's lightly considered. People understood that that was necessary, but we know in our day that people no longer understand the Constitution, and our leaders, either if they do understand the Constitution, are willfully violating it, or they themselves are ignorant of the Constitution, that it requires an amendment process if you're going to change anything about what the federal government is permitted to do. Of course, since the war on alcohol in 1919, there have been a number of unconstitutional wars, and by that I'm not referring to things like the Korean War that were never a declared war, or Vietnam that was never declared constitutionally. I'm talking about other than what we normally consider wars: a war on alcohol, a war on poverty. LBJ in the Great Society, called for a war on poverty, and of course there's a war currently on, a war on drugs, which again is a completely unconstitutional thing. That's something that our founding fathers wisely
left off right there.
Designed.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest, Pastor David Whitney, and of course, he's talking about the war on alcohol that was brought in with the 18th Amendment, and you have to understand, whenever the government goes to war on something, it complicates the matters. We had a war on drugs, and We've got more drugs than we ever had before. We had a war on cancer. We've got more cancer than we ever had before. We had a war on poverty, and at that time we had 4 million people living in poverty, and today we have 20 or 30 million living in poverty. We had a war on hunger, and they used to tell us that 4 million people went to bed every night hungry. And now, of course, hunger really is much more prevalent within our society. So, you know, the idea that the federal government can solve the problem. The government usually can't solve a problem. It is the problem. It makes the problem. And that's what they did with the 18th Amendment. But, as Pastor Whitney points out so well, they knew that the only way that the federal government could justify limiting people's access to alcohol was to amend the Constitution and give the government the power it had never had before. It doesn't have the power for any of these other wars. It's just taken them. But at least back in the time when the 18th Amendment was put in, they understood that there were limitations on what the federal government could do. Isn't it too bad we've forgotten about those limitations?
And those limitations were understood as essential. In other words, you cannot do something you're not permitted to do, because that's breaking the contract. That's breaking our covenant, our Constitution. Today, our federal officials routinely break the Constitution, and they get away with it because the American people don't understand the nature of our government, and they don't understand the restrictions placed upon the federal government. And so the current war on terror is another example. Who's the enemy? Well, it's anybody, anywhere that the government defines as a terrorist by whatever definition they choose. And these kind of things are extremely dangerous, because what war allows the government to do, everybody kind of gives them a pass and says, okay, we're at war, and therefore the normal things that we would not permit our government to do, we will now permit them to do. We'll now permit them to snoop and listen to our telephone conversations without a warrant, and snoop into our email and go into our bank accounts and our credit cards, all those things. Sure, we're at war, so we'll let the government do that. And that's what the evildoers know. They know that people will relax the standards that government is normally held to in peacetime when there's a war. And you look at the war on drugs, the same thing there. The draconian kind of powers that the federal government has to come in without having actually proven in a court of law that a person is guilty. They are guilty without, guilty before they even face a trial, and they can have their assets stripped and all the rest of the evil things done to them, not even having anything but suspicion, and so it just violates every principle that justice is founded upon. But in that day, people understood that, and so an amendment was passed, and of course, Congress, given this blank check to, you know, basically do whatever they wanted to do to have a war on alcohol, created a department. A bureau, the Bureau of what we call today of Alcohol, Fire, and Tobacco and Firearms. And this bureau is one that gained enormous powers to run around the country and override the power of the local sheriff and arrest whoever they deem to be violating their war on alcohol. It's interesting, however, that the big boys in that prohibition era, they made out great. They, like the Kennedys, they made out like bandits. They did not face any prosecution from this war on alcohol. It was more often the small guy, the fellow running a still out in his backwoods there, that he wasn't making a huge amount of money on it, but nonetheless, the revenuers came down on him and destroyed his still and put him out of business. The other thing, interesting thing that took place is many people in our land understood that this is really unjust, that if someone chooses to distill liquor on their own property and consume it themselves or even sell it to other people, that's their business. It's none of the business of the federal government. So what happened in the court of law, when many of these cases came up, a jury, understanding their power as a juror, which again many people today don't understand, that the juries, as our founding fathers designed them, were to judge not only the facts in a case, but they were also to judge the law. Was the law constitutional? Was the law just? Was it a good law?
The whole idea of jury nullification,
right.
The jury is the ultimate source of the law, and the jury says, look, we don't think this law is right. They can simply go against the law and turn that man free.
That's right, and they did this so frequently during the era of Prohibition that it was very hard for the federal prosecutors to actually get convictions. They might destroy the person's still and destroy their supply and so forth, but they actually had a difficult time convicting and imprisoning people because juries understood, hey, this is not just and we're not going to tolerate this. And so a movement began to grow from a number of these trials and a movement across America to recognize that, first of all, this was an unwise decision to have the federal government in control of the alcohol trade in the country.
Now, and another thing was, you know, there were so many people who were violating the laws. There were speakeasies all over the country, and people would go there because they wanted to drink. Now, I consume alcohol. If I have 5 glasses of wine a year, why, that's a lot. But I think if people want to drink, they should have the right. Certainly, some people shouldn't drink, and some people can't control their drinking. But, you know, to outlaw this, it is not the function of the federal government.
Right.
When it becomes the function of the federal government to keep all men from their follies, then we shall have a race of fools or a race of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were pointing out, of course, they created the Bureau of the Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearms, the BATF, you know, to control prohibition. But, you know, the closest thing to eternal life in our society today is a federal bureaucracy. And so even after they repealed the 18th Amendment, why, the BATF went on, continues on, always looking for a cause, always looking for a reason to exist. And that's what brought, of course, the tragedy at Waco.
Mm-hmm.
They needed something to make them look good, to make it appear to the people that they were really, you know, defending them and protecting them from wicked people with automatic weapons. And, well, we don't even know whether there were any automatic weapons there. The government has lied about everything that happened in Waco.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all a propaganda campaign that just happened to go bad, and 68 people died.
And so that is a puzzling thing. Why is it when Prohibition was repealed, why wasn't that bureau put it in the grave, 6 feet under, buried, and done away with? Instead, it continues on and continues to gain greater and greater powers. Again, one of the fears our founding fathers had was of police power centralized in the federal government. They wanted the police powers to be down at the local level, that the sheriff was the most powerful law enforcement officer, not the CIA, not the FBI, not the BATF. No, not a federal agency, but the local police were to be the ones who handled the keeping of the peace in the community, because they knew the people, they had relationships with the people, and they were accountable to the people because they were elected by the people and not some unelected bureaucrat coming from Washington, D.C., descending on a local community, as all federal agencies do.
You know, that's really what's so frightening about the Office of Homeland Security, because they're buying the support of our local police. They're giving them hundreds of thousands of dollars for equipment that they don't need, they didn't ask for, but they're just giving it. It's free money. Go ahead and take it. And now, suddenly, our local police are increasingly dependent upon the federal government,
mm-hmm.
and increasingly going to go along with them. After all, if they've given you a big gift before, maybe they'll give you another one. It's sort of like, well, what they're doing with the churches today. Giving them money, and are the churches really going to speak out against what the federal government does when they give them free money under the faith-based initiative? No justification at all in the Constitution. Total violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution. And yet they're going ahead and buying the support of the churches, and what's even more frightening is the churches are taking the money. And, of course, being absolutely quiet, not speaking out at all against the excesses of the government. And that is indeed exactly as it was in Hitler's Germany, where the churches were financed by the Nazi Party. And, of course, they went right along with what the Nazis did, because if they didn't, they would cut off their funds.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, Peter Kershaw, calls it hush money.
Right.
Money given to silence the churches, because they know churches are one of the few institutions remaining in our country that are willing to speak out about against the evils of an increasingly hostile to our liberty federal government. And again, the interesting thing that we see in the history of the 18th Amendment is that it was repealed in the 21st Amendment. There was enough of a move among people to recognize that this was really an unwise decision to give the federal government this power. We need to take this power back. And so they gained enough votes, again, very difficult process to amend the Constitution, but they succeeded in amending the Constitution and changing it. And the great thing about the 21st Amendment in this regard is that it makes the point that any amendment to the Constitution subsequent to the Bill of Rights, that is, Amendments 11 through 27, any amendment is subject to being revoked and being repealed. In our last show, we were talking a bit about the 17th Amendment. I was commending former Senator Zell Miller, who called for the repeal of the 17th Amendment. Of course, he was lambasted as being a buffoon by all the press and media because they don't want people in America to know the secret that is a bad amendment and that it can be repealed. Any of these amendments, the 14th Amendment, the 16th Amendment, they can be repealed if the Americans were to rise up and demand this of their legislators, saying this is unconstitutional, this is a bad amendment, let's go back to the Founding Fathers' design, let's get rid of bad constitutional decisions.
I'll never forget on the Saturday Night Live, they had this caricature of Zell Miller and just how ridiculous he was, and how it's something old, really sort of an archaic Southerner, you know, yelling and shouting, and Zell Miller was one of the few people who had the courage to say the 17th Amendment, the direct election of senators, was simply one nail in the coffin of our republic and bring us into a democracy. And but then, of course, when you speak out and tell the truth, you can be sure that every major means of communication in America will come against you, because they can destroy anyone they want to, anytime. Well, go ahead, David. Let's pick up the story.
So the 21st Amendment completely undid the actual amendment, 18th Amendment, but did not eliminate the bureaucracy. And perhaps if they were wiser, they should have included a clause in that 21st Amendment that would say every piece of legislation Congress has enacted based upon the 18th Amendment is also hereby undone by this. And the authority basically to regulate alcoholic beverages was returned to where it really belongs, to the states. And there are some states, like to the north of us here is Pennsylvania. They have a special